morning, honorable members. The Office of the Auditor General, DPME, the department, you are welcome in this meeting. As I've indicated yesterday, that today we'll be dealing with the briefing by the Auditor General and also the briefing by the DPME. Thereafter, we'll receive the briefing from the ITB and also from the Commission. Without the waste of time, I'll just give it to Chililo to just present the apologies.
Good morning, honorable members. We have five apologies, one from honorable Kikane, who is not feeling well. Honorable Mtlongo, who has other commitments as well. Honorable Minister Nkwinti, honorable Sultan, who will join us in the afternoon. And we also have an apology from Deputy Minister Mashego Dlamini, who is also attending a departmental meeting. Thank you. And Ponga also is on sick leave.
Those are the apologies as presented by Chililo. Can we note the apologies and just move on with our agenda? I hope there's a new party that has been formed. When looking at the records, Mr. Matthias, EEF, I don't know whether it's a new party. Can that be corrected? Not EEF, EFF.
It is not about a misspell of the acronyms for my organization. It's either I'm recorded as having been absent from meetings. Is it a coincidence, or is it a systematic occurrence of how we have been recorded? Can I get an explanation, please?
It's just a typing error. I don't have any additional information with regards to that, but I was just highlighting the type of error that it needs to be corrected on the first page of our agenda. Then thank you very much. The apologies have been presented and we have noted them. Without a waste of time, then can I request Dr. Ngomani to take the stage and make the her presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Let's express our appreciation for the invitation on behalf of the DPME and the opportunity to share the assessment report based on the performance of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. In terms of the request from the committee, we are expected to present a briefing focusing on outcome 7, which is comprehensive rural development and food security. There was a specific request to track that performance since going back 3 years. But we started from 2014, which is the beginning of the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework. Secondly, we're required to give a report of the management performance assessment tool for the department and the implementation in terms of strategic plan of the department and the ATPs, the annual performance plan for approval purposes. And we prepared a separate presentation just to give you insight in terms of the level of alignment between the department's strategic plan ATP to the medium-term strategic framework and the NDP. We probably won't speak to that part of the presentation, but it's available on the system for use by the committee. The work of the department, similar to the work of government, overall is anchored around the National Development Plan, Vision 2030. What the period of focus, as we speak today, extends or covers the first five-year pillar into the implementation of the NDP, which is the medium-term strategic framework 2014 to 2019. Just as a reminder, we do have the approval date for the National Development Plan as 2012. It does serve as the umbrella policy that is informed by strategies, other strategies in government, including the new growth path, the industrial policy action plan, and other government plans. But overall, those, in terms of them, these strategies being taken into account, actually culminated into the National Development Plan, which is our first wholly owned plan for the country. It has buy-in from some civil society, government, and other non-government players. Now, our work and the work of the committee seeks to implement Chapter 6 of the National Development Plan, and it's based on specific key points that are designed to ensure there's an integrated and inclusive rural economy and land reform. Just a quick reminder to the committee, the six key pillars of Chapter 6 of the NDP are listed in on that slide. One is to ensure that rural communities actually have greater social, economic, and political opportunities to overcome high levels of poverty. It emphasizes that agriculture development should introduce a land reform and livelihood strategy that ensures rural communities have jobs. It seeks to ensure that quality access to basic services, particularly in the area of health, education, and food security, is attained. That plans for rural towns should be tailor-made according to the varying degrees in each area. This is a pillar that recognizes areas of differential opportunity based on various regions. That intergovernmental relations should be addressed to improve rural governance. Now, as we move into the implementation of the NDP, as committee members know, government is often criticized regarding our inability to implement plans and policies, that we're very good at formulating this, but we struggle to implement. However, this is not the case when it comes to the NDP. We have the medium-term strategic framework structured into five-year crunches, as highlighted in the earlier slide, and the first 5 years is already into implementation. We actually are moving very close to the mid-term review for that implementation. So the medium-term strategy framework is the implementation framework for the NDP. We need to make this very clear to the country overall. In its development process, critical actions and key outputs aimed at putting the country on a positive trajectory towards the achievement of the NDP were identified for delivery over this five-year period. It has key performance targets and indicators that government seeks to achieve of the NDP, that of an inclusive rural economy and land reform. Now that outcome seven, subsequently in the medium-term strategic framework, identified and got approved based on six sub-outcomes. One is to improve land administration and spatial planning for integrated development in rural areas. The success of this particular action or sub-outcome is dependent on the finalization of the national spatial planning framework. Sustainable land reform, contributing to agrarian transformation. There was an understanding that land reform should not be for the sake of just handing over land as an asset, but also underscore the utilization of that land towards agrarian transformation. Improved food security. This is an action led by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The fourth sub-outcome is to ensure smallholder producers.
Sorry, Dr. That slide is not in the... I don't know whether it's only in my document.
Now move on to share with the committee the cumulative performance of the Department of Rural Development over the period starting April 2014 to December 2015. That presentation is going to be is going to follow the sub outcomes as presented before. The top line of that slide, which doesn't show, if you refer to the COVID. Slide number 10. The top line of that slide shows that we're focusing on sub outcome 1. Which is improved land administration and spatial planning for integrated development in rural areas. So the sub-outcome has several actions. We are tracking three core actions related to that. We're tracking, my apology, five core actions related to that. The first one is the performance indicator. Don't know what happened on the screen. The first one is to ensure that the National Spatial Development Framework is developed and approved over the period. By way of progress, there's a draft research report for the National Spatial Development Framework has been developed to inform key thematic areas of the NSDF. This is work that has besieged the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform over time, and they were engaging closely with the National Planning Commission to reach this level and our offices. That research report has been subjected to a consultation process with several departments. To date, they have engaged and received comments and inputs from each department to concretize those themes. The second indicator speaks to the number of provinces supported to develop their own spatial development frameworks. We have the Northwest and Gauteng that is at advanced stages in the process of developing their own provincial SDS. Regarding the number of municipalities implementing this Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act as the performance indicator flowing from the first two indicators, there are around 154 out of 164 municipalities that were engaged on a detailed review of municipal spatial development frameworks. Progress is being reported on a regular basis. So they have not yet, the spatial development frameworks have not yet been developed, but in terms of the processes, 94% of the municipalities are in a good standing, if we use the political language. In good standing. Another key indicator on this outcome speaks to the intergovernmental relations. The performance indicators to ensure that the intergovernmental relations and stakeholder management strategy is developed and implemented. This is an important indicator because rural is a cross-cutting function. It entails many, many departments that are contributing to this phase, and it's a concurrent function. We have, at the last count, about 22 departments that are engaged in this space, spanning national, provincial, and local government structures. So we needed an intergovernmental relations strategy that ensures commitment of the key sectors to the performance indicators and targets for the outcome. recent MOUs, we, our intention is to ensure that all key departments that are signatories to actions reflected in the outcome surveys and other outcomes actually sign a memorandum of understanding, some kind of document that will enforce, you know, compliance, but also enable tracking and allocation of resources. So we've done this, the department has achieved this already with the Department of Water and Sanitation. This was urgent in terms of prioritization, given the scourge of drought and other headwinds that have been challenge to the sector. The number of stakeholders contributing to implement to the implementation of rural development programs in line with the rural development plan, 16 sector departments, 9 provinces and all municipalities contribute. On sub outcome 2, deals with sustainable land reform, contributing to agrarian transformation. The key priority on this sub-outcome was to establish functional administration or land administration structures. By end December last year, we had 44 district land reform committees that were established and launched in an event that was led by the Minister of Rural Development, supported by the deputy ministers in this regard. 42 district agri-park management councils were launched on the day, and we had the National Agri-Park Management Council So that's an area of good progress. On the indicator number of strategically located hectares of land acquired and allocated, the target for 2019, the target for 2019 is to allocate 2 million hectares of land, strategically located land. As of 2014, just above 500,000 hectares of land were acquired and allocated. This represents 26.4% of the 2 million target for 2019, and it also includes the 235 hectares of land allocated under restitution. We just showed the baseline in November 2013 was 7.39 million, so this is a slight addition to that baseline. On the indicator number of sites to strengthen relative rights for people working the land, this is the 50-50 policy framework. The indicator was to ensure that there's piloting. Piloting is done on 10 sites. So the sites have been identified by way of progress. There are also 4 commercial farms that were allocated to farm workers under this 50-50 policy framework. And the new performance indicator this one, so we did not have a baseline in 2013-2014. On sustainable land, as we continue with the sustainable land reform for agrarian transformation, we highlight to members of the committee the 2 performance indicators that are highly transformational in nature. One is the percentage of hectares acquired. The percentage of hectares acquired that have been allocated to smallholder producers, and the number of hectares that have been allocated to people living and or working on farms. Our target was to ensure that of the total hectares that are newly acquired and allocated, 50% must be allocated to smallholders by 2019. And 10% must be allocated to farm workers or people living or working on farms by 2019. We are not doing very well on this one, hence the red rating. The latest available measurement shows that on the first performance indicator focusing on smallholders, we at 12.9%, we have achieved 12.9% of the 1 million. On the people living and working on farms, that 10%, this is good progress. We only started tracking this on this indicator since 2014. So it's still reasonably good, reasonably acceptable at 84.7%, but at this rate, we're not likely to achieve the set target by 2020. A summary of analysis. There are some, of course, concern around the slow transformation in land reform. We showed the baseline in November 2013. That was at around 9% of the 30%, the 1994 target, to allocate, to ensure 30% of the land of the 82.5 million hectares has been transferred to the previously disadvantaged, if you recall that that target back in 1994. Some say that was over-ambitious, it was not properly informed by data and all that, since there's no information, even today, that speaks to audited information that shows the amount of productive land available in the country at the time. However, the target has been set and we've been reporting against it for a while now. So of that 6% target, we're at 9% in 2018. And a direct translation of our current achievement puts us at we've achieved 7.39 million of the 24.5. The 30% target, the 30% of 82.5 million translates to 24.5, just about 25 million hectares. We have so far on that baseline in 2013 we're at 7.39 million. The target, as we spoke to earlier, is to transfer 2 million hectares by 2019, and by end December 2015, we had transferred 26.4 million, 26.4% of the 2019 target. In numeric terms, that translates to 7.92 million hectares. We are committed to allocate 10% of newly acquired hectares of land to people living and or working on farms, and 50% to smallholders. And as indicated earlier, we're not doing very well on those two targets. We also note that though beneficial, the popular choice for financial compensation amongst claimants does somehow negate the gains of land reform. This is where communities or beneficiaries have to choose between financial compensation or the circumstances around the reform program, in fact that they cannot acquire the land as an asset and choose therefore financial compensation. That might negate the land reform program or agenda, because substituting land for money could be an issue of the selling way of disposition. I guess what we're saying is that the first priority should be to gain access. As we proceed with the analysis, we thought maybe we should bring to the attention of the OGAS committee the very encouraging progress around restitution. As on 25th February 2016, this is actually, it goes beyond our December 2015 reporting time frame, so it's the latest information. 133,778 new land claims have been lodged through an electronic system in 4 lodgement service centers and 6 mobile lodgement offices. And we'll bring this to your attention because that number is almost double the number of claims that were lodged over the same period, over the 4-year period in the previous window. The fundamental difference in that window period and this one is the use of the e-registry, e-lodgement system, and we wish to commend the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform for improvements in the manner in which the land claims are lodged. It has been easier for communities, more accessible with the provision of the mobile lodgement offices. Regarding settlements, by the end of November 2015, 78,483 claims have been settled and just close to 60,000 were finalized. The settlement of claims resulted in 3.2 million hectares of land restituted at the cost of more than 19 billion to qualifying claimants. Quite expensive, but a necessary intervention for the healing of the country. 1.4 million hectares have already been transferred to beneficiaries, and the restitution program has to date benefited 1.94 million individuals, or 390,621 households. If we want to focus specifically on the period April 2014 to December 2015, regarding the settlement and the finalization of the claims, the number of claims settled is around 879, finalized 731, and number of hectares restituted 205 hectares. I think the department will speak more to this, but what is critical about the figures is that from the monitoring side, we were concerned previously of the inconsistency of the numbers reported. We since took a decision and reached an agreement with the minister in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform that they will issue a letter confirming the numbers as reported for that period, and those that letter is then posted on the public website, and information that is available for public comment and use. And this this program to be a working program within the smallholder development support sub outcome, and we're tracking performance on that. By March 2014, the baseline was at 642. Since then, where the department has actually recapitalized an additional 510 funds. That recapitalization program is one of the programs that has been subjected to an evaluation by the DPME, and the findings thereof are quite encouraging, even though there are challenges in terms of improving efficiency in the program and value for money, but the results are quite encouraging. Sub-outcome 6. Sub-outcome 6 seeks to achieve a growth of sustainable rural enterprises and industries resulting in rural job creation. We track the skill development programs, the job creation, focusing on expanded public works programs and support to rural enterprises. By just speaking to that slide 18 on skills development, we note quite the number of people trained under various programs, just above 30,000 over this period, trained through NARFEC, RECAP, the ACD program, internship program in education, and other initiatives. On job creation, the expanded public works program has created 1.3 million, just above that, work opportunities and 391,194 full-time equivalent jobs. An additional 98,013 jobs were created through land reform projects, the manufacturing investment, and the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program and Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative under education. Regarding support, the provision of support to rural enterprises, just below 1,500 rural enterprises were supported through rural development, tourism, and small business development sector initiatives. The concern is the baseline because it's very difficult to track progress without a definite baseline, and the departments involved that are leading on this action, small business, tourism, are finalizing the issue around the baseline. On the rural district plans, three rural district plans were finalized out of the 27 targeted for 2019. Is an area of concern. Our analysis in brief, particularly as it relates to the impact indicator on reducing rural unemployment. We observed that rural unemployment has declined from the baseline of 46.1% in quarter four of 2014 to 45.7% in quarter four of 2015. This is based on the Quality Labor Force Survey by Statistics South Africa. So we see that decline on a year-on-year basis. If we look at the MPSS define our target is to ensure that we reduce rural unemployment to 40% by 2019. So at this stage, we're not likely to achieve that target, but this is an issue that is located within the broader economic status in the country, and the committee needs to look into that critique in that context. The other issue that the Department of Public Works has been working on over the past two reporting quarters is to ensure that there is a very good quality register with identification numbers of all people identified. So they are working on verifying that. This process has resulted or has affected the numbers of people employed that were reported over the last two quarters. But it has not affected the work. The work has happened, but the numbers reported have declined as in view of the improvement or the verification measures in place. A lot more needs to be done to support existing rural enterprises, as we saw in our performance report and also the district plans for rural enterprise development. There's a concern around employment opportunities created for youth and people with disabilities. First, the baseline is yet to be determined over the reporting period, but the performance of youth opportunities created at 41%. And opportunities created for people with disabilities at 1.5% is not creating confidence in our ability to respond to this issue. More effort needs to be put into employment of young people and people with disabilities to achieve the target of 50% young people employed and 2% people with disabilities employed. Our last input on sub-outcome 6 relates to the AgriPath initiative and the animal and child management program that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has introduced over the reporting period. We highlight AgriPath because in the State of the Nation address, this was one of the key areas of performance that the President spoke to in terms of within the context of the 9-point plan. 26 farms were acquired to support agri-parks already. 44 sites were selected for establishment of agri-parks and production plans have been finalized and approved. 21 projects and 5 agri-hubs are at different stages of implementation. The department could actually appraise whether those 5 agri-hubs have been launched already. 342 farms are under the animal and child management program. What needs to be done is to ensure that construction actually happens on this site, focusing on the production aspect. We're emphasizing this because it's very easy to go into the agri-parks and focus on infrastructure development, which is quite kind of easier to do compared to ensuring there is productivity on the land. This concludes the first part of the reporting session, Chairperson, that looks at the performance around the MTSS as requested by the committee. The second part speaks to the MPET result for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. I'll quickly go through through this performance report based on data completed and approved in 2014. But the improvement measures, the principle we use is for the department to speak to the improvement plans, because this way we ensure ownership, joint ownership in terms of changing for the better the status quo. We have, however, prepared a separate report that we can make available to the chairperson regarding the implementation of the improvement plan on MPET. It's for youth to and the cross check tool. The management performance assessment tool uses it's a tool that uses the four levels to for the department to self-assess with the support of the DPME the ability to the level of compliance on various performance areas. The assessment levels, so level one, if the department is completely non-compliant with the legal or regulatory requirements, that's a level one. You'll see that as a red in terms of rating. Level two, the department is partially compliant with legal or regulatory requirements. The level three, the department is fully compliant, which is similar to the EMBA in our outcomes assessment regime. Level four, the department is fully compliant. On the first performance area, which is deals with the strategic management. In 2014, the department was working smartly in all three areas for strategic management, that is strat plan, the development of ATP, and the M&E processes. There was definitely an improvement since 2012 to 2014, especially with regard to their formulation of the APP and the monitoring and evaluation. It was an intense process from our side, working openly and intensively with the respective units in the department. They really took the interventions to heart, and you see as reflected in the MPET results. On governance and accountability, the department is working smartly, operating at level four in five areas of governance and accountability. Those are in terms of management structures, the audit committees, the fraud prevention interventions. If you also look at that screen, unfortunately I don't have a pointer, you see the progression from 2012 to 2014. 2012 was more red in several of these areas. As they move on towards 2014, there's improvement. This is what the MPET intervention is able to achieve in the management processes within departments. The department was operating at partial compliance for the SDIP and need to improve going forward. Regarding professional ethics and adherence to PIA requirements, the department is at the compliance level. On human resource management, on human resource management, we see an area level, the assessment rating, if you see, look at the deviation column, is declining a bit. The same goes to, the same applies to the PMDS of the head of department, which is a common problem for our government, that is declining, as well as the PMDS, Performance Management Development System, for level 1 to 12. Our analysis then shows that this, on human resource management, this is the only KPA that the department is not performing so well. It's not only the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. It's a common problem in several departments in government across the country, the HRM, based on MPET results. The department has improved in human resource planning and PMDS for SMS members. Their performance has declined in the following areas for the HR KPA. In terms of recruitment, from 2013 to 2014, due to the department not providing the full climate survey report. The score for delegations has also declined due to the delegations not being aligned to cabinet-approved minimum levels. The performance has also declined in the following areas. The score for the PMDS for HOD has declined. The verification statement could not be provided as evidence, and the score for disciplinary cases has declined, as all cases were finalized, were not finalized within the 90 days from identification. There's no improvement on diversity management and employee health and wellness. Regarding financial management, you see on the screen in 2014, the cash flow issues, I'm just highlighting the red, has actually declined performance in that regard, and also the payment of suppliers. So overall, the department has performed very well in the financial management KPA, scoring level 4 in 6 out of 9 areas. The department has been performing consistently at the compliance level for logistics management since 2012. The score for cash flow has declined from a compliance level to non-compliance in 2014 due to the cash flow projections and proof of timely submission to Treasury not being provided. The score for payment of suppliers remained unchanged from 2013 to 2014 at a partial compliance level. We want this area, significant improvement on this area, particularly given the commitment by government to pay suppliers within 30 days. In terms of recommendations for improvement, the KPA that needs the most improvement is human resource management. The department can obtain support from DPSA as the policy department for HR, so they need to strengthen, really strengthen relations with the DPSA in this regard. They need to extract ideas from good practice departments on how they are working smartly. There are awards or departments that have been identified and awarded with excellence for best practice in this area. We encourage partnering with those departments like science and technology and others. Ensure proper planning to meet due dates for plans and reports and provide the relevant evidence during MPET self-assessment. Some of these things, the performance has declined and all that because of, you know, inability to provide supporting evidence, which is a pure management or administrative issue. We were not required to report on expenditure and budget, but were provided that information Chairperson, allow us to quickly just summarize this briefly. In 2014-2015, the department was allocated 9.4 billion. The expenditure was at 9.4%. I think the Office of the AG will speak to these issues. 2015-16, 9.1 billion, no audited figures at the time of preparing this, and 2016-17, a slight increase to 10.1 billion. Just a quick overview of analysis of expenditure per program. In the annual, in the ATP and strategic plan of the department, there are five programs. Program 1 on administration, Program 2 dealing with geospatial and cadastral services, Program 3 focusing on rural development, 4 restitution, and 5 land reform. We just want to show the variance in expenditure from 2014-15 to 2015-16. This is the primary purpose, and to highlight the programs that are under spending. For 2014-15, the department spent 99.4%. Okay, but there was underachievement on program 1 at 17%, and on land reform at 30%. The performance on rural development program 3 was amber. Both program 3 and 5 are key transformational programs, and we want to see improvements in that regard. We also bring to the attention the excellent work done by the restitution program in terms of ensuring expenditure of their allocated resources. It shows, it links up very well with the improvement that we have reported under restitution and the number, the acceleration in lodgement of claims and finalization, settlement and finalization of claims. So there's consistency on the expenditure vis-a-vis the performance on the ground. But going to 2015-16, we're registering some concerns. Already at quarter three of the financial year, the budget expenditure stands at 56.8. So there's something that has gone wrong in the system in terms of performance financially, where there's this high expenditure level, then the service delivery probably is suffering in this regard. You see on the land reform program at 56%, rural development 45%, geospatial cadastral services 46%. So the department is not spending the money allocated in the impact of service delivery. When we drill down to areas of slow progress within per program, you see on program one, the vacancies that are supposed to be filled are not filled at pace. The percentage disciplinary cases finalized is very low. However, let's comment the payment of invoices. We're looking at the 100% payment there within 30 days, but 84% is really a good is a good performance. Areas of slow progress. On program two, I'll just highlight the SDF, the Special Development Frameworks. There is a process of engagement, but we don't have the SDF developed. That is because developing the SDF is linked to the National Special Development Framework, where we said earlier we're still discussing that they're engaging, the thematic areas have been agreed upon, and all that. breakthrough plans, we spoke to that. It shows 3 out of 27 targeted. The domestic facilities surveyed, 60 out of the 450 targeted, you know. So this is, those are the areas of underperformance. On program 3, rural development, we just highlight the number of rural development information desks that have been established. 0, target was 10. District municipalities structures to support agri-paths, you know, the infrastructure projects, 0 out of the 13 targeted. Possibly the focus here was on setting up the administrative structures. Now that these have been established, probably we'll see an acceleration in terms of having projects now on the ground unfolding. The River Valley Catalytic Program, 0 out of 5 targeted, is an area of concern because this has been, the program has been in the system for a while now. On Program 4, even though we're commending the work on this, on this program, restitution, still, you know, it's a kind of amber with the 658 out of the 1,064 targeted for the period lodged or researched. Researched. This is a research performance indicator. On land reform, program 5, there's slow progress in those areas as identified. Number of hectares acquired, hectares allocated to smallholders who spoke to this, labor tenants, applications settled, and number of state land parcels confirmed as vested. On the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, they will speak to the presentation. We just want to show the magnitude, the disparity between the land that is purchased vis-a-vis, that is handed over vis-a-vis the land, the financial compensation part of it. So I'll skip this slide, the lines, and show that pie chart on slide number 43. If you look at the large part of the pie chart, which shows the land purchased and land and subsoil purchased, it's a larger part of the chart at 67%, followed by financial compensation with 30%. It would be interesting to conduct more work showing what is the impact of the financial compensation, that increasing pie chart towards purchasing land and ensuring that the land is actually transferred as an asset to the beneficiaries. On Ingonyama Trust, they will speak to this. We just show that the work of the trust, the 4 programs on the trust do contribute to outcome 7. They are actually aligned to sub-outcome 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6, and they are aligned to outcome 12. We mentioned those areas of alignment from the Ingonyama Trust. We highlight the achievement for the trust, a key highlight for 2014-2015, my apology for the spelling error there, was the overall achievement of 90.69% on the performance indicator targets as noted in the annual performance plan. I'm sure there are issues that will be discussed within that, but we note the 90.69%. We also note the amount paid to various educational institutions. benefiting around 120 of our learners from Zululand and Kanyakude district municipalities. The details on the work of the trust, we have expertise located within that institution to speak to that. On that note, Chairperson, allow me to thank you for the time, and my apologies that it took so long, but we wanted to cover extensively all the areas related to the performance of the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tsakang Romani, for the detailed presentation. Honorable members who have been listening to the presentation, can we comment, ask questions if there are any, based on the presentation as made by Dr. Ngomani. Honorable Walters, Honorable Magadla, Honorable Robertson, Honorable Madela, then Honorable Nguni. Honorable Walters.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I comment, I just want to say the purpose of a report is to also tell you what's going wrong. So if I express criticism, it's not at you, because I think you're helping me to add value. So I actually thought the report was quite good in outlining what is happening, and I think if you couple this with the presentation that we had yesterday from the Human Sciences Research Council, I think we can actually draw some interesting conclusions. So I actually stopped making notes when a couple of trends in the report came out. I think what we have on the one hand is underperformance in terms of targets that get delivered, but it's also very clear from the report the very institutions that are supposed to deliver those targets in terms of the National Development Plan are all still in the phase of implementation. So if I can use an example, if your land district, the land reform district committees are not in place or not functional yet, they have just been launched, there's no way that your land acquisition targets are going to be met in terms of the IDB. You know, so without going into all the details, because then the Chair, you're certainly going to cut me off after a while because I'm going to be taking too long. I would certainly like to see in the future actually in terms of the land reform committees and how they are delivering on land acquisition targets as per the National Development Plan. I would like to see the reports being formulated like that, because at an aggregate level, I don't think we're necessarily getting the picture of whether the system, the institutions that are supposed to be delivering land reform are in fact working. And I think the same, if I go back to two meetings ago when we had the presentation on the Agri Parks, what we have at the moment in this report is the councils running the Agri Parks have been formed, some plans that have been put into place, and I think in the report it was said, well, it's easy to look at infrastructure, but it hasn't actually delivered on the targets yet. So from my point of view, what I'm interested in is not the targets itself that I think were set in isolation from the institutions that are supposed to deliver on those targets. I actually want to know what's the progress on the AgriParks, what's the progress on the land district committees, and then I think also relates to the other district-based institutions like the land rights facility units. And I think if our reports in the future can actually tell us how those are functioning and in relation to those our targets are being met, then I think we have a sensible way of engaging with the report. But aggregate, until those institutions are in place, we're going to keep underperforming and we're going to keep getting this type of report. And then this will be nothing new. I think in the interest of consistency, we are reporting on outputs. You know, things like people have been briefed, municipalities have been engaged with. The actual outcomes that I think we should be looking at is, as I said, progress on the institutions and how those institutions are meeting those targets, rather than telling us, not that I'm trivializing, but how often paperwork is being passed between different people. You know, that to me is not really taking us forward. Then the other comment that I wanted to make, I'm summarizing a lot of individual types of remarks that I could have made, but that's generally the trends all the individual comments that I wanted to make. In terms of the land claims, I'm still concerned that where we are at the moment is the registration of the claims is the easy part. That system, I don't think there's a major problem that anyone has with the ability of the department to register claims. I think there's obviously lessons being taken from the past. The claims are being registered. I think what you should be concerned with is the extent, whether there's a research capacity to deal with those complaints, whether the budget exists to actually resolve those claims. In that sense, I'm concerned that we are not getting an indication whether the department or the commission has a handle on that. What we see here is past performance that of the old claims and the sort of accumulated performance. What is going to happen to the 150,000 claims that's been registered up until now? Do we have the capacity to research them? Do we have the capacity to settle them? And if we're looking at a projected 400,000 claims, do we actually have the capacity to settle that, not to register them, but to settle them? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Walters. But some of the issues that you have raised will be addressed by the presentation that will be made by the Commission, not the DPMA. Honorable Deputy Speaker, you're welcome. As an ex-official member of the committee, DMA also welcome with the team, with your team and the Chief Land Use Commissioner. Can you proceed, Honourable Members?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Firstly, let me welcome the DMA report. My first comment is, what is the progress report to other provinces in connection with sub-outcome 1? You said here a number of provinces supported to develop SDFs, and then you mentioned Northwestern Gauteng. So what is the progress report to other provinces? Secondly, in your management performance assessment 2-level, as Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, how can human resource departments, to all the departments and not rural development and land reform only, be improved so that they perform well, as this is the face of our department's human resource? Last comment is, in your analysis for quarter 3, that is year 15-16 budget expenditure preliminary report, still program 1, that is administration, achieved only 33%. What is your take in that? Thank you very much.
Members, some of the questions will be raised when we meet the department tomorrow. But the briefing by the DPNE was just an analysis, an overall analysis, based on the performance of the department and the ITP. But the detailed reports will be presented to this committee with regards to ITP today and also the commission today. The department will present its report tomorrow. So some of the questions will be responded to by the presentation by the department. Honorable Madela, Honorable Mgonyiwe, the last.
So thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, the presentation is very, very much welcome, Chair. My question is probably misplaced, but I want to pose it in any rate, Doctor. In your, as an outsider looking in to the department, specifically with regard to the slow transformation in land reform, why do you, in your opinion, in your recommendation, you didn't make any recommendation with regard to that. What must be done in order to accelerate this particular process that we, as set out, achieve the 30% target that has been set way back in 1994, as you indicated, by the end of December last year, we were only 9.6%. So what must be done? So what can the department do better to accelerate this particular process? Amelia, thank you, Chair.
Chair, thanks, and good morning. Let me concede your point, Chair, that certain issues would have to be referred to the department directly for a reflection or report. But just having said that, starting with Dr. Ngomane, to say the awkwardness is that we're in the period of APPs and policy speeches or policy pronouncements and so forth, starting with SONA, which took place 2 months already. Whereas as part of evaluation really has to cover the period that is gone by already. So it switches our modes from, but we understand, like now, while we're on this, there will then have to be a fourth quarter and annual report sometime later in the year. So that's the awkwardness to engage in a consistent manner, because we keep going the other way. Perhaps to the effect that when we meet the department tomorrow, we might be forward looking, saying this is what is contained in the APP for 16-17. But I think we'll try and link up with issues of the period that has just gone. The other issue for the good doctor is for all reporting, I like the Treasury regulations when they say actual versus targets. And I know that your good self, at instances you just reflect or reflect on performance, it's very difficult to evaluate or to quantify performance that's stated not against any targets. I picked up quite a couple of them. I thought it's a cause in common. We will not argue about it. So the actual versus targets, we request that at all instances we receive it in that format so that ordinary people like myself can still be able to interpret it. But also, where permissible, also versus budget, Doctor, versus budget, so that we know, there's a good point you're making somewhere that there was 90% performance, I think at ITV or something, or Restitution Commission, 80%, something like that. You know, that's performance on targets, but it does not reflect on the budget. So that we tally performance versus the targets versus the budget, and we can then be able to sharpen our oversight as to whether the performance was coming or going. I'm really basing myself to the presentation, not really to the department. I'm merely making reference to the issues of the department. On the narrative, shall I say, the first part of the presentation, on the narrative, perhaps even after the application of the MPET tool, is critical assessment permissible? Would you consider integrating it? In other words, we shouldn't be surprised. Yes, we should. It's our own organ by HSRC saying, the expenditure on rural development is declining over the years. It becomes a great eye-opener, which we should have picked up even via your department in the presidency. So the critical evaluation, because performance can go, but it can be a performance that's taking us to a, you know. So the overall critical evaluation, good enough you were here yesterday, HSRC said there, and they really opened our eyes quite a bit, you know, with some shocking So can we be able to get more of that from your good selves as well, even if you don't have HRC, SRC code or gymnastics? That was referred to the statistical gymnastics. Chair, once again, from the MPET part, which I like very much, perhaps other people could call it the micron. From the MPET part tool, the diagnostic tool, is the department overall coming or going? Is the department, are you able to pronounce? Are you at liberty to pronounce and say the department, there's amber flicker lights or green all the way? But my page 26 doesn't look very good. I like the red color ordinarily from a different angle from Honorable Matthias, but my page 26 looks quite red, and I don't like it from a different angle from you, Honorable, my Honorable colleague. The last technical one. Have you been able to check with the department, doctor? There's this talk of 27 districts, and there's this talk of 44 districts. My little knowledge of numbers, that those two are not interchangeable. One is almost half of the other. And when you talk districts, that's a big part of the country. 27 versus 44. I see that at instances you mentioned freely 27 districts. Have you checked with the department if you are of the same understanding? Because whenever they've been initiating programs, it's an issue that the committee has been seized with. You'd find that other parts, the department freely, and I say this without any fear of correct, the department freely moves between saying no, there are 27 to saying no, there are 44. They'll have a chance tomorrow to clarify the distortion. I see now that the public protector is able to even respond on the spot when there is a debate on the House, and they know I didn't have confusion about my power and so on. I don't know if that's a standard in government, but I'm just saying, so the department will have a space to respond tomorrow. May they not tweet answers to whatever I refer to the department. Please not tweet to the, and just allow time for us to interact. For now, I sit with an impression that they move really between 27 and 44, and we're very much uncomfortable with that. Thank you.
Honorable Matthias.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I think the spirit is good that the department gives us an environment, an opportunity to look at the performance of the department. And I say department, I refer to the department on planning, monitoring, evaluation. With the presentation, it's providing us with information which can be displayed on our radar screen. Whether are we equipped, are we capacitated to read the information and to look at the different dots, and also to analyze the information presented before us and something else. But what is also key is the source of information, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation uses all the time to arrive at the kind of conclusions that they do. Do they depend exclusively on the information presented before it by Rural Development and Agrarian Reform Department and the Ministry, or do they rely on other additional information of standalone departments or institutes that are interested in what the department is doing? I think that is key. Otherwise, if they depend on one source of information and being part of state institutions, one department evaluating the performance of another, they will always provide subjective one-sided information. Perhaps we need some balance between the two.
Look, department says it stands on various legs to pursue its mandate, one of which is restitution of land rights, redistribution of land, development, rural development, and lastly, land tenure reform. Over the last 2-3 weeks, we've had, which is an ongoing process, it has not yet reached its finality, meeting with farm workers to understand really the situation around land tenure reform. Perhaps it will also be important if we can, on an ongoing basis, on a quarterly basis, on an annual basis, get the actual situation on our countryside. Has the situation, the employment and labor relations remain the same as it was under apartheid, or there are marked improvements? And what is the regime around land tenure system in the country? I think the report, if you can talk to such a matter in detail in its second appearance before the portfolio committee, it would be very good. Not really in isolation of the other critical areas. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Dr. Romani, I think you have been noting the questions. Can you also please explain the... You've said the department was unable to recruit due to full climate survey report. What is that? And also you mentioned the issue of the accuracy with regards to... whether it's lack of accuracy with regards to figures, because I'm thinking of the presentation that has been made by ALO, that is very much difficult to get the data, you know, from the department. What is your view with regards to that one? Especially, I think you were referring to restitution. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, for the insightful comments and questions. The areas of recommendations that we'll take forward to improve the report, but there are specific comments that I'll respond to immediately. Regarding the observation by Honorable Walters on these trends, I think that's a correct observation, but related to specific sub-outcomes. We highlighted, for instance, just one example relating to consistent or concerning performance on land reform, underperformance on land reform. That is correct. Consistent underperformance on transformation of smallholders in terms of their ability to access land and on labor tenants. So to cite some few examples. But I think we are on the right track by going back to the basics, where in the department and the stakeholders dealing with issues around land reform are now focusing on establishing institutions as required in the National Development Plan. And these institutions for land administration, for land management, and all that, and even determining of prices. Chairperson will recall that in the fourth administration, the sector was inundated with the challenges around the willing buyer, willing seller. Even before, you know, in the third administration, that has been an issue. The pricing was restricting the ability of the country to perform on land reform. What that pointed out was the complexities around the lack of or inadequacy in institutions to administer and manage land reform. So we're going back to the basics through this medium-term strategic framework, the first 5 years, focusing on establishing these institutions and ensuring functionality. So the problem with the solution already, and we should take courage on the solution and work together towards ensuring that the department follow up really ensures the functionality of the district land committees, of the agri-parks structures established to transform the sector. Regarding the issues around restitution, that the reporting on the claims lodged or reporting at output level, somehow downplays the quality or undermines the quality of the report. It's an issue that we're noting for improvement. There's a process initiated in DPME and the National Planning Commission to actually revisit, for us to change the reporting regime. We need to revisit the target as set out in the MTSF. Currently, we're reporting on that which has been approved on the MTSF. In some cases, number-based, numeric-based. In some cases where you have, for instance, to set up institutions, is the processes towards establishing these institutions. So that's within the reporting system, but we're working on improvement towards what the Honourable Member has proposed. The restitution, I'm encouraged with the observation that we need to strengthen the research capacity. A key indicator point is on slide number 39, where we show, even though we have great improvement in terms of the lodgement, the e-lodgement process on restitution, the research capacity is a bit wanting, and it's reflected on the expenditure slide, with the target to research more than around 1,000 claims. We're able to only conduct research or achieve 638, if I'm correct on that one. So we agree with that observation. It's important that this more rigorous research work or capability that informs the land claims processes, both in terms of review and also the finalization thereof. The provinces supported to develop SDFs. All nine provinces have been engaged in this process, so they understand fully what needs to be done to develop their special development frameworks. But the two provinces has gained more intervention with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform actually going to the Northwest and Gauteng to sit and work with them to finalize this process. We have reported in our program of action or in a need for the department to actually do more that kind of move, hands-on will for all other provinces. But in terms of level of understanding, they are all. The HRM on MPET and Program 1 achieving 33%, what is the DPME doing around this? Would you say that on HRM this is like a national situation, but the department has developed an improvement plan to address the weaknesses in human resource management? The committee should request the department to present that improvement plan on the HRM. This is our approach in dealing with the MPET issues. The Honorable Mandela Mandela. My apologies. Yes, Mandela. The slow transformation on land reform, what must be done with us standing at 9.6%. I think this whole issue of revisiting the institutions to administer land reform, to control the runaway prices on the land that is put on the market, is a critical issue that society at large has raised. It's a matter that has also been documented in research work, in various summits conducted by government to deal with land reform issues. For the first time in the Fifth Administration, we're seeing that willingness in action to establish, to go back and establish institutions and also amend the legislative framework to allow that. So that is work in progress. The NDP in itself on Chapter 6 actually underscores the importance of setting up these institutions that Honorable Member has referred to earlier on. What we need to focus on, all of us, including civil society, is to define the level of, you know, functionality, the ethics guiding these administrative structures to ensure we're able to perform or deliver on the targets as set out. So our expectation is we're likely to see improvement now in the like manner that we have seen improvement around the lodgement of claims. We're likely to see improvement in the number of claims that are finalized and settled. Honorable Mungoni, we note the issue around actuals versus targets. Sometimes when we prepare these reports, we think members of the committee are so familiar with our medium-term strategic framework chapters, we don't have to repeat the baselines, but we know that for consistency to put the actuals vis-à-vis the performance targets, we'll address that. On matching or analyzing the expenditure vis-à-vis performance, I think that is the work that we're all about. Just to use as an example, our expenditure analysis working with Treasury shows that in 2014-15, the restitution program managed to spend 100%. In 2015-16, they are already at 80%. If you match that financial achievement to the performance on their targets, on their outcomes, we see there's some alignment in terms of expenditure vis-à-vis the budget, the budget allocation vis-à-vis the performance indicators, and we've highlighted that. However, there are areas where the performance indicators on rural development, as an example, is not in line with the expenditure pattern. We see there's underperformance in rural development, and the expenditure is kind of in some, for some actions, the expenditure is high, for some actions the expenditure is low. So we work with Treasury on this issue to look at what is the level of expenditure consistent with the performance on the commitments made by the department on the MTSF. And I will urge members to look at those slides again and identify those areas of discrepancy. In some cases, we see a serious alignment right there where the expenditure is zero, and also the support provided to a particular grouping as committed in the MTSF, like the smallholder farmers, is wanting. We engage more the Human Resources Research Council. I must say that all the research councils and academic institutions are clients of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. We commission their services to conduct evaluations. We use their research products to analyze the reports as presented by the department. On MPET, the Honourable Member focused on page 26 of the slide, which deals with the HRM. We did say that is an area that is not doing very well in all the performance areas on MPET, and the department needs to share with us the progress made regarding the reducing those rates that you saw on the slide. The issue around 27 districts vis-à-vis 44 districts. The 27 districts, as members of the committee know, is an approved number of vulnerable districts that have been approved by cabinet, which was also, that approval was informed by a scientific determination of vulnerability in those districts. There's a resolution that says interventions, key interventions must prioritize these vulnerable districts, the 27. The 44 districts is what the Department of Rural Development has prioritized for the AgriPath intervention. We might want to establish the logic behind that. In our assessment, our understanding is that all districts contribute towards outcome 7 of the medium-term strategic framework, and all districts have areas of differential opportunity within them that based on the scientific work done could contribute towards the AgriPark and AgriHub development initiative. But we might need to seek clarity from the department in terms of what is the criteria there. So in that sense, if you think of differential opportunity residing within each district towards one of the tenants of the AgriPark initiative, so you might want to adopt an inclusive approach towards the initiative. information used by DPMA, Honorable Matthias, is with multiple sources. The first being seeing the medium-term strategic framework falls from the National Development Plan, and that informs the program of action of government. So we're reporting on the targets and performance indicators as set out in the medium-term strategic framework, and that becomes public knowledge once approved by cabinet and is posted on our website. So the POA, the Program of Action Report, is done quarterly. Departments generate that report. They are expected to report progress against that, against the POA. So that's one level is binding. The other level is looking at the research outputs from academic institutions, from research centers, from civil society groups on a particular sector and a specific issue. So that is taken into account. We also conduct evaluations within the department, for instance, for the work of the outcome. We have about 10 approved evaluations on the National Evaluation Plan that generate information, diagnostic information, implementation information, and impact information for the sector. We also have a very good unit of within DPME that looks at monitoring frontline service delivery. That information is taken into account where citizens comment on key performance areas supported by the hotline work. So it's multiple sources of information that we're using. You're correct, if we're only relying on the department, there would not be any need for us to intervene, because then we'll be repeating what the department is saying, and it takes away the objectivity. One of the key benefits of having the capability in DVM is that you're able to have an objective assessment of the performance of government. We'll take forward the recommendation to speak to the land tenure reform issues. We brief the committee based on the stated objective of the briefing session, and we'll welcome a formal invitation to do that, to speak on land tenure reform. The climate survey report that the department can expand further on actually looks at the gaps in the vacancy need or requirements of the country and the sector type deal, and it's a very useful tool to show what are the areas of competency that are required to inform the skills development program of government for the particular sector, and what are the gaps. Also in the analysis, you're able to then see which areas of specialization are not addressed or adequately responded to within this system. So we need that difficulty of getting data. It's a simple administrative challenge around compliance, providing evidence, which we strongly encouraging government to strengthen when you're required to provide evidence of an application or ID document, you make those readily available to the oversight structures. And sometimes the department was found wanting in this area, and that has affected the scores, even though they were doing well, but just providing administrative evidence has resulted in a negative performance rating, and we think this is a small matter that could be improved quickly. Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ngomane. Do you have any members? Do you have any follow-up questions? Deputy Speaker, Honorable Madela, you have the follow-up, and then Honorable Nguni will be the last, so that we close the session with the DPMA. Over to you, Deputy Speaker.
Thank you, Chairperson, for indulging me. I'm brought here also by nostalgia of committee work. I'm just keen to ask around the issue of research that supports the settlement of claims. The answer might going to be coming from the department when it presents, but I'm asking it of Dr. Ngomane as the people who often also scan the entire environment in which the department operates. We know that universities in South Africa, which is what it is called now, used to be called HESA, Higher Education Institutions. There's a collaboration that we have spoken to them as Parliament to work together. And I was wondering whether there is a discussion with them to see how, in collaboration, they could have a partnership with the commission to deploy researchers under supervision to be able to fast track that program, so that that partnership has a multiple purpose to achieve the research to settle claims, but also academic performance for those who are learning researchers under supervision and so on. So both the university and the department and government will be able to achieve these multiple goals together. I'm just wondering aloud whether there is any such discussion, because often the reason for research capacity constraints is money, and whether maybe we can stretch the rand to be able to achieve these multiple goals in this manner. It's just a thought that I was wondering whether there is anything of that sort, and if there are obstacles, what kind of obstacles are there? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Speaker, Honorable Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. Just two points. The first one, Chair, relates to the whole issue of evictions, farm evictions, Chair, and in the same vein as the Deputy Speaker, you know, crazy issue of research, there seems to be not clear, concise statistics available around that, Dr. Ngubani. So one certainly hoped that DPME could get involved there. I do understand we have the department have briefed us around that, but one is not quite sure whether the actual that are tabled before us, whether that is the reality out there. You know, one, our public hearings have clearly indicated that the levels of evictions of both farm workers and people, I'm talking about land occupiers and their families, the numbers are much more than what has been brought under our attention, Chair. Chair, I've been last Monday or Tuesday at a hall full of women, very, very angry, highly emotional, who have all been evicted from farms in the Boland area. So one is a bit concerned about that. The other one, Chair, and I'm happy that the department was advised, and the DC is not here, but DM, that advice must be taken very, very seriously on the issue of
learning best practices, in particular from DPSA, Department of Public Service and Administration, around HR matters. The only additional one I want to add there is in relation to disability. I mean, I don't understand whether the political level, your political champions articulate very, very well and is very concise and determined to ensure that the department fulfills all its obligations to people with disabilities as a vulnerable group, as well as women and youth. But at the implementation level, the statistic doesn't match that kind of a commitment. So one also is a bit concerned, and the concern is not only in relation to the employment. It must cascade down to the actual service delivery. How many of those who have been beneficiaries of restitution are disabled? You know, the agri-parks, the whole issue of beneficiation, the services that are being rendered. So one wants to perhaps the department, I mean the DPME should look and advise the department holistically with regard to that. Thank you very much.
Honorable Nguni, Honorable Robertson, you'll be the last one.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I also had my hand up. If you don't want to give me the opportunity, fine, but I did have my hand up.
Thanks so much, Chair. I don't envy where you're sitting, Chair, because you are battling to find hands, and that is fine. Let's all play politics. The discussion point about whether another state organ can then monitor and oversee others on performance, I think it's a healthy discussion that could help our governance and democracy going forward. Although to that basket of discussion points, I could factor in that vertically we've seen school principals who are able to oversee their colleagues and counterparts, other teachers, you know, as control measure, as control mechanism. They all fall within the same system, so I'm just taking an example of what maybe almost all of us went through. So it's still, from that point of view, possible. Well, there's a hierarchical question that the school principal is above other educators in that sense. But, Chair, I'm just saying it's a useful point raised by my colleague, Honorable Matthias. Well, the horizontal one also, if you look at various other inspectors, be they health inspectors, be they labor inspectors, they go into every other department because they are custodian of that mandate. So it's their duty to... So from where one sits, Chair, I could sit in a positive bias towards saying the DPME should be able to oversee the performance and monitoring of other departments. But of course, we expect what I may call, also borrowing from someone, a healthy tension. I don't say a tension, I say a healthy tension. But DPME, from where I sit here, but if there's an alternative, then it could help strengthen our system going forward. So I think I continue to espouse and appreciate that DPME is playing the role that they are playing. But safe to say, my point about them being critical was responded to by Dr. Ngoman. But I still think that perhaps it's food for thought further. Because you can't say you leave it to your clients, HLRC, to show us that expenditure on rural development is gradually declining over the years, over the past decade or so. You can't leave it to your clients. Perhaps it should belong to yourselves as the principals. But I'm not saying perhaps respond to the... It's an ongoing discussion. I take kindly to your response, Doc. The targets versus actuals or performance versus budget, it refers... I'm not referring to the broad areas. I'm really referring to where you were talking to the narrative. We would have to bring our APPs of last year and all our documents of last year to know that the performance was 9. And then we would then have to measure that 9 against something. Definitely we will not keep statistics on our heads, Dr. Ngoma. So that's the point at which I was just cordially requesting that whenever you reflect on a number or on a performance, it is useful and user friendly to reflect it versus what was targeted, and it is still useful and user friendly to reflect it versus a budget. The tricky part perhaps is nicely captured in that answer to that tool. I like that tool. Wow. I like it. Is that when there's a cash flow, the tool says there's cash flow problem. That's below the national average. Yeah? That's my page 26 there. Yeah? I don't know. Not. Somewhere in some other page. There's a cash flow problem. But you see the problem at the end of the assessment period, you won't see cash flow because by then things will be balancing and tying up. I'm just making a point in general. Basically to say it's got to be checked. My main point, again, ongoing discussion. Thank you for the useful, perhaps I lose concentration at times. I've not heard this well-articulated explanation of 27. But I do know that amongst my colleagues, I've also been seized with the 27 versus 44. If you've got 2 billion rands for 27 agri-parks, and then join the information by GPME that says, check, this 27 is the struggling ones, excuse my ordinary language now, that was a good term you used there, Tom. This 27 is the struggling ones. But if you take that 2 billion and then stretch to the 44, then the poor subsidizes the rich, so to speak. The poor subsidizes the rich. I'll leave it at that because I guess we don't have time, but that's the implication if we deal it early between 27 and 44. Some other time, some other slot, we would have to look at it in depth. I do know that numbers, from politics is derived from numbers, definitely for sure. So the 27 and 44, if there's 2 billion allocated and then you decide to be generous and stretch it anyhow, then you land in the poor subsidizing the rich, because that 2 billion would have been targeting the poorest of the poor. But if you stretch it, it then goes to the rich being subsidized by the poor by the poorest of the poor. It's just a commentary again. Thank
you very much. I think Dr. Ngoma will respond to some of the questions, but on the one that has been raised by the deputy speaker, I think Dr. Ngomani will respond. If not, I'll request the Chief Land Claims Commissioner to respond, because according to my knowledge, there's something that is happening on the ground with regards to the partnership between the Commission and the various institutions to fast-track the research process. Over to you, Dr. Ngomani. Oh.
You used to remember Nguni ending at this. No, it's you just forgot about us.
Honorable Robertson, then Honorable Walters will be the last one.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for the report. I'm going to bring something very basic to this committee's knowledge, and it's something that I experienced a week and a half ago on a personal oversight to the Department of Agriculture in Mzinti near Songa in Mpumalanga, where they have a training facility there as well. And when I got there, I realized that the entire training facility as well as the agricultural department was stagnant. There were 58 tractors, of which 53 of them were not working at all. These are 58 tractors that are supposed to be assisting emerging farmers that are farming specifically and predominantly for now these tractors, of which, as I said, 53 of them were broken. In my knowledge of agriculture and construction, these tractors were no more than 3 or 4 years old that had been standing there derelict. I do not understand. I raise this now specifically now because we're looking at the performances, but I want the committee to take this into account, what I'm telling you. I do not understand how it is that we're assisting beneficiaries like this. On further investigation, it was found that the tractors that were standing over there, the 55 of them or 53 of them that were non-functional, all they needed were simple repairs of radiators, simple repairs of tires. The tires, in fact, that had received punctures were piled up on top of one another. And on request as to why it is that these tractors were standing, they said, well, they were awaiting the next financial year's budget. Very, very worrying. What I also came across, and which I want to bring to this committee's attention, is that in light of the drought, National gave out disaster management, or the disaster management plan gave out money to individual areas where there was drought, where cattle were dying, and in this specific Mzinji training facility in the rural Department of Agriculture, there was 150,000 rands worth of hay that had been delivered on a truckload. Thank you to much of the work done by colleagues of ours here in the National Assembly in these portfolios, where these hay bales were just thrown off a truck, left out in the veld, and 2 weeks after they had been delivered, 70 or 80 millimeters of rain came down, which has left the hay bales unusable. So the 150,000 rand that was basically thrown out into the field. There was no management from the Department of Agriculture with regards to who was supposed to receive those hay bales. And because of this, because of a failure of administration, 150,000 rands worth of hay bales were just left out in the rain and ultimately rotted. Now, if we're really serious about looking at restitution, and if we're really serious about answering the Deputy Speaker's question about what are we doing in terms of research to be able to hasten this process, I think we also need to ask ourselves, what are we actually doing out there in the field that is benefiting our beneficiaries and is benefiting our economy? Because from what I saw, it was a shocking display of maladministration. In the field, and we cannot go any longer like this. We are easy to talk about evictions here and evictions there, but in the areas where government has intervened and beneficiaries are supposed to be benefiting from what it is that we're doing over here, nothing's happening. I think we all know this, and I think this needs to be addressed primarily as a matter of urgency. Thank you very much.
Honourable Rogers.
Thank you, Chair. I think that specific instance that Member Robertson is referring to, I think that's also something that I think specifically needs to be taken up because, it sounds very, very concerning. It's also the kind of image that creates damage if it goes around and people see it. It's like a symbol of failure, and what we're looking for are symbols of success. Especially in something as serious as a drought that I really think should be above party politics, and I do believe it's in that context that it's raised here in the committee that it can be taken up. But I want to get back to something I mentioned earlier, the kind of, call it, failure of intervention that Member Robertson is referring to again refers to a lack of a local institution driving land reform, agricultural intervention, in this case a drought relief. What's the point of government and the department spending money, ticking the box when it comes to the Auditor General with the various financial, monitoring systems we have in place, but that intervention, that expenditure is not taken up by a local structure, a local institution that can change, make sure that the necessary gets done with the resources. It goes back to what we earlier said about functional agri-parks, not just ticking the box of there's a committee in place, functional land reform committees, functional extension services, and I can continue along that vein. And remember Mandela made me think now when he made a remark about, he spoke about the evictions. And yesterday we had the presentation and we underlined the importance of data, knowing what's going on the ground. I recall in the earlier presentation that we had the need for having a register of rights of people, a register of who's staying where, what rights they have, you know, whether it's in a commercial farming area, whether it's on a communal land area. We actually need to know exactly who the people are living on land, wherever it is, whether it's government land, whether it's private land, what their rights are in terms of those lands, so that you can monitor when an eviction, for example, is illegal or not illegal. I think and we're not on the item of the public hearings yet. I'm sure we'll debate that at a later stage, but my impression was that we are hearing a lot of anecdotal information, often by people that are not truly representatives of farm workers. In fact, a major farm worker organization wasn't even present at one of our hearings in the area where they operate. We haven't heard from commercial farmers. That's also an important perspective that we need to include. But the point I'm making is this. Much as subjective opinion should not be ignored, subjective isn't synonymous with wrong. We must listen to the subjective views. We also need to have an objective, factual basis in the background, that research capacity in whatever we are doing. And I think, if we go back to the example that Member Robinson used, was there a group of people in place that knew exactly where the need was in terms of that hay bales that should have been delivered? Or is there a system in place there where tractors that are obtained are actually allocated to where the need is to make sure that it's been used by people that maintain it? Is that facility, for example, in place in an agricultural setup? So I cannot stress enough that there's a certain ecology that needs to be in place on the ground to make sure that intervention by government, by the department, is actually effective. And it's not about just spending money. It's actually about making sure that the money that we do have is used effectively. And I think that's a fundamental approach that I think this committee should adopt. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Walters. So I think the issue that has been raised by Honourable Robertson will be referred to the Portfolio Committee, to the Portfolio Committee, because that is their responsibility, so that they can assist and making follow up on this issue. Thank you very much. And Doctor, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue raised by the Honourable Deputy Speaker is most welcomed. One cannot overemphasize the importance of research-based information in guiding policy. We at that stage in the country where it's so critical to develop the research capacity and use the information generated to inform solutions and do so at pace. And the case in point around acceleration on restitution processes, on settlement of claims, using evidence and informed by research, is so, so critical. One of the weaknesses that we have heard, now speaking as an academic, has been the disconnect between the institutions of higher learning and government in terms of performing a complementary role. You know, institutions of higher learning, Deputy Speaker, work around research themes, as you well know, research themes, and these research themes in a collaborative, intergovernmental, interstate setting. Those research teams should actually complement, should be complementary in nature. Our prime agriculture-based universities and research centers should be driving a research agenda that is responding or helping government make informed decisions, informed policy reviews, inform new policies in that space. They should be training or developing capacity to support government implement on these areas. So we have had a disjuncture where from the side of government also we have not been that strategic in terms of helping institutions of higher learning, academic, establish centers of excellence, programs, research teams. That advance the work of government. And I think dealing with the land reform challenges, particularly around acceleration on restitution and redistribution, we need to rethink this process and see how best can we strengthen this collaboration. There is work going on within the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. A unit has been established to drive the research agenda of government beyond across outcomes, and soon we'll be presenting the research plan for the country in the like manner that we have the National Evaluation Plan. We'll have the research plan for the country approved by cabinet. And in that plan, there's a recognition of the need to work in partnership as opposed to duplication. So DPME does not go in and conduct research that is done by institutions that have excellence, excellent competences and skills in doing this work, but work collaboratively in partnership with such institutions like your universities, human sciences research councils, and the like to drive the research team. From the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, I think they'll address this, this committee later on. You'll hear concerns around capacity. We really need to make a deliberate effort towards strengthening or supporting or resourcing efforts that will help the country work based on verified data, scientific research, and all that to find solutions to our problems. They will raise these issues, probably also speak as Madam Chairperson made refer to the processes that they are working on. But suffice to say, we'll be tabling the research plan soon, Deputy Speaker, that articulates the research agenda and approach for the country, but will also underscore the importance of taking deliberate steps towards establishing and supporting centers of excellence, focusing on key areas that seek to find solutions towards achievement of the NDP. Thank you very much for raising that issue and bringing it to prominence. The other issues, I think we have comments and guidance in terms of how we should proceed and deal with issues of evictions and all that. I want to underscore or explain better the concerns or the observations made by Honorable Mngoni around how we're utilizing other sources to inform our analysis. As DPME, I think it's important to understand the mandate of the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation as a key department that helps the state not only implement the NDP but monitor the performance thereof and do so in an objective manner. In this instance, it becomes part of the identity of the department to use data generated by other institutions, by other countries within the region and internationally to inform our analysis. And that is the approach that we're adopting as we subject and provide guidance and monitoring and evaluation. We strive not to duplicate the work done because we don't have that level of capacity. But to the extent that is expected by government of that ministry, we actually are evidence-based and we use the research generated by other sectors to reflect and inform our analysis. The discussion around one department overseeing other departments, I think, is an ongoing discussion that that besieged this committee and other committees as well. To Honourable Robertson and Honourable Walter, there were raising issues around, again, underscoring the importance of relying on data to inform decisions and to find solutions. But the key word that I'm taking out of this presentation and the discussion throughout based on you, on your engagements and submissions is the importance of focusing on functionality of interventions across the board, whether it's an intervention around mechanization or an intervention around establishing institutions, is the functionality that is the operating word, and we'll use that as to inform our work in DPME. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ngomane, for the detailed presentation. Oh, DM, your hand was up before I conclude on this meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm aware that we are presenting tomorrow, but I thought I needed to clarify a few issues. The first one is the 44 district versus 27, which we couldn't convince Mr. Mngoni. My explanation is that as a Department of Rural Development, in terms of the implementation of the CRDP, the poorest of the poor districts are the 27. Where we are implementing the CRDP as coordinating the 26 department and service delivery in those rural areas, rural districts and municipalities. That's what we are doing. When it comes to AgriPark as a program, we felt as a department that not really to concentrate on the 27, but let's extend it to 44, because 44 is all the districts together with the metro municipalities in South Africa, the 44. So now we thought that we're operating now in terms of the program AgriPark in all the districts in South Africa. and regardless of whether they are poor or not poor. Our take is that we are creating a business, especially in the district that are really in the metropolitan areas, because agriculture is not really working there, but they need to use technology to produce, because at some other point they don't have enough land, they don't have enough space. When it comes to governance structures, the district land committees, because we are dealing with land throughout South Africa, therefore we must form the district land committees in all the 44 districts, so that at district level they must decide and advise the department how to go about on the land piece, the certain land, the pieces of land, this and that, and how to utilize it and how to transfer it. That is the situation of the governance. That's why even the Agri-Park committees are almost at 44 districts. The functionality of the district land committees, district land reform committees, it relies on the policy that we have put together as a department, that we need to strengthen first the valuer general, so that they must support the district land committees in terms of the land parcels that need to be purchased in all the districts. So now we have established the office in the last financial year. So this financial year we'll bring a report to you, how are we going to make those committees to be functional. On the issue of the security of tenure, we were quite aware that we were very slow in that program. What we have done now, we have dispersed groups of people who are doing research, household profiling of all the farm workers and farm dwellers, so that we quickly transfer the state land that has got some farm workers and farm dwellers. We have started in last month. We have transferred plus minus 15 pieces of land, which was state land. We have just transferred it and donated it to the farm workers. But we have realized that now we're transferring land, we didn't have a proper report in terms of the household profiling. What is it that is needed for these people to make that land productive? So this is the program that we are undertaking now, so that we start with the state land and continue to purchase land to be transferred to secure the tenure of our farm workers and farm dwellers. So we thought that it will also alleviate the issues of farm eviction, because farm evictions are going on as much as we are going to court, but it becomes very difficult on the side of justice, because we don't have a permanent court, land court, because they always send, like we have reported in the last meeting. So our minister and minister of justice is dealing with that, so that they establish the land court to be permanent, not really to really rotate the judges and the magistrate. So these are some of the issues that we are doing. But our take is that we need to purchase that land and transfer to these farm workers, farm dwellers, so that we don't experience these problems that are going on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your comment. Thank you very much, Dr. Ngomane, for the informative presentation. I think it will assist us when we engage with the department and its entities. We'll invite you again to brief us about the land tenure as requested by members. I think we're welcoming the intention to review, especially the method of reporting, which is mostly numerical, as you said, because sometimes it makes our work very much difficult when we oversight this issue of numbers and percentages, you know. So we welcome that initiative. Nevertheless, thank you very much.
honorable members, can we invite the Auditor General's office, Eugene, to make the presentation? Get settled and be quiet so that we start. Over to you, Eugene.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morning or afternoon, members. I'm going to keep this as brief as possible, and then I'll take questions afterwards. If you go to slide number five, it talks about the process that we followed in evaluating the APP. So those are the steps that we look at. So we look at, does it align with the MTSF? Are indicators relevant and complete? Is there a logical link between objectives, indicators, and targets? Are the targets realistic? Can everybody hear me? Okay. Are there adequate human resources available, or resources and financial resources available? How can APP be achieved? And then what review takes place over a quarterly and an annual basis? Then regarding the HSA process of review, we will then say assess the process followed by departments to prepare and submit the strategic plans, and then also assess the measurability and relevance. So measurability meaning can we measure these targets and the outcomes against these targets, and relevance, are they relevant to the mandate of the department? Then what we do is we report on the findings that we've identified in for the 16-17 draft APP in our 15-16 interim management report. The criteria we use for your measurability of indicators and targets. Regarding measurability, we will look at, are the indicators well defined, are they verifiable, and are they smart in terms of are they specific and time bound. Regarding the relevance, like I explained, the relevance talks about whether or not it's relevant to the department's mandate and applicable legislation. This is a quick budget comparison that we did for 15-16-16-17, where you will see the biggest increase in the budget related to Program 4, restitution. Then regarding slide number 9, it's a quick overview of our criteria we assessed regarding rural development. And then rural development includes EADS and ALA as one plan. And then Inkonyoma Trust has got a plan on its own. So what we indicated is that we identified some matters relating to relevance of the ALA targets not being specifically specified in the 16-17 APP for rural development. It should also be noted that we reviewed this plan, we gave our inputs, but we did not review the final submission of the draft. So when we communicated to the department, they did discuss and they have addressed our findings or our comments that we made going forward. Then regarding for Inkonyoma Trust, we raised three matters, but it's not material, it's more just descriptive matters in the technical indicator descriptions. Then if we go to the actual review of the department's annual performance plan for 2016-17, you will see that what we identified regarding target 2.1, number of district rural development plans completed, we said that the target is not specific as to what detail is required on a complete district municipal plan, as well as who should approve the plan. We feel that the technical indicator description needs to be expanded. Then regarding the deeds, the percentage of deeds made available within 7 days for lodgement for execution, we said that the method of calculation is not consistent with the requirement of the set target, as the target required a calculation of the percentage, while the description of the method of calculation states simple count of deeds. So these are just small descriptive matters they must look at before they finalized the annual performance plan, and that this will be relating specifically to the technical indicator descriptions. Then regarding Program 3, what we identified with Program 3 was that we said that the target definition is not specific as to how the projects are selected. And there's no set criteria that is explained for what does the implementation of a project mean. So those are just the things that we discussed with the department. We did have a meeting with them, and they did indicate that they are addressing this in the final draft submitted, the final IPP submitted. Then regarding 3.3.1, number of skills opportunities provided in the rural development initiatives, what we said is the target is not specific as to what is defined as a skills development opportunity, and whether the skills development opportunities are linked to any unit standards, or if the training provider is accredited or approved by the department to give the required training. So what sort of quality assurance is done on the training initiatives? We also indicated then just some of the portfolio of evidence information that we feel we needed a bit more assurance for, let's say, the very last bullet on the first 3.3.1 talks to from the description of the portfolio of evidence in a technical indicator description, and then the register could be accepted as achievement without considering the duration or any other criteria of the training provided to ensure the actual transfer of skills. So we just feel like maybe there needs to be a bit more portfolio of evidence needs to be provided whether or not this training actually happened, and not just for compliance sake, but what's the impact of the training happening. Then regarding 3.3.2, number of youth recruited through the NARISEC program, what we identified is the target speaks to number of youth recruited, yet this program has been running now for 4 years, and we don't see a target for youth completed because that will be going to impact assessing as to what's the impact in the rural community of the training being provided. Then 3.3.3, number of jobs created in the rural development initiatives. What we identified here is that it doesn't specify what type of job is created. Is it full-time, temporary, or a once-off job that's created? Because this also then speak back to impact. So that's one thing that needs to be considered. Maybe split the target as to what jobs are created for full-time employment and what are temporary and what are once-off. Then regarding Program 4, we did not identify any issues regarding usefulness for Program 4. We do, however, just as a consideration, just highlighted that from an impact point of view, no performance indicator for measuring the time frame of finalizing the land claim. Therefore, at the moment, it is assessing with how many claims are being finalized, but it doesn't specify how long that claim has been in existence. Then regarding Program 5, what we identified regarding Program 5 is that this is the land reform program, and obviously Allah will contribute to this specific program. And if, when we engage with the department, when we look at these targets, we cannot clearly differentiate what part forms part of Allah, what part forms part of land reform. And when we engage further with the department, they indicated that the Allah targets are included in the operational plans, which does not form part of the annual performance plan. We have not yet reviewed those operational plans because some of them are not yet finalized. But yes, it is something for taking notes going forward by the committee, is that where is Allah's performance being measured? And then number of farms under recapitalization development, also the same regarding what part relates to Allah, what part relates to land reform. And then 5.5.2, the very last bullet says, targets also not specific with regards to the criteria which is considered when a farmer is trained. So again, as to this training that's happening, is it linked to a accredited criteria or some form of certificate or some way of quality assurance being provided on the training that has been provided? Then just our general comments regarding the plan. Number one, program 5. These are just obviously recommendations that the department can use or they can choose not to use. We just felt like these are maybe things we need to look at. Is the time frame target for approval of business plans in relation to all our acquired farms, and in the turnaround time target measured for financial aid and grant payments given to all our farms. Then the very last point, we just did a comparison, 1516 to 1617 plan, and we found that there was a reduction of more than 20% of the targets from the 1516 to 1617 plan. So the 1617 plan's got more than 20% less targets than the 1516 plan. When we inquired with the department, they stated that they had a strategic session, and they felt like a lot of the plans were a lot of the targets were operational and not strategic in nature, and therefore they moved them to their operational plans, which is 100% fine if they want to do that. Obviously, when they finalize the operational plans, we will have a look to see which targets have moved and to get explanation of the relevance of those targets. Then we also just stated to say the second bullet, what research been conducted on new targets included in the 1617 plan and how they've been formulated regarding how they've been formulating, taking into consideration available resources that you have available for financial and human resources, like we're listening now regarding the restitution research claims. And then the other one is also then similarly what informs the decision to retain existing targets in the 1617 APP. Then other information the committee requested with regards to implementation of the AG recommendations and addressing AG findings, the department is making progress regarding this. They also do track it by the audit committee on a quarterly basis. The DG is also holding staff members accountable by issuing warning letters for repeat findings on a year-on-year basis, which is also a very good sign. And then the other thing what we also identified was action plans are being drawn up. They are being monitored by the audit committee and by internal audits. In terms of progress, but you still find sometimes repeat findings, and then you have to go back and ask the question is, what's the effectiveness of the action plan, and are they addressing the correct root cause? So that's just something for consideration. Then regarding the risk areas for the portfolio committee to take note of, is the narrowing expenditure that we will be doing again now in final audit, doing a big assessment. Immovable assets, if I talk about immovable assets, is the immovable infrastructure assets for program 3, specifically relating to development of infrastructure in the rural communities. That is something that we will definitely audit in detail now at the end of the year. And then the third one is the land reform farms, and specifically relating to how does the beneficiary selection process work regarding the land reform farms. That's something that maybe needs some attention. Then regarding the performance information, like I mentioned, it's just the ALAS performance that needs to be tracked, or either in the APP or operational plan, but it just needs to be properly tracked as to what does ALA need to achieve and what's the objective and where do they want to be. And then regarding project visits, these are just some recommendations of three farms that the portfolio committee can consider when they do their project visits. Okay, then regarding Nkunyoma Trust, like I mentioned earlier, it's three matters that was highlighted by our auditors. It should be noted that this has got no material effect on the APP, therefore it will not have an impact, it will not have a material impact on the audit of the ITB's 2016-17-8 APP. But if you read at the auditor's comments, you'll see the biggest thing that we're raising is just more detail as to what an IT audit involves and what will be the scope that they want to look at. And the second one is number of internal skills audit performed. Also difficult to measure such indicator, more detail as to what the internal audit encompasses. And then the last one is more or less the same, also just about more detail regarding that. Then regarding feedback on the ITB's performance in terms of addressing all the general's findings, they've got three main qualification areas, the one being the one with the PPE, which is the assessment of land. So what this qualification has been coming for the last 5 years. However, during the 15-16 financial year, the entity has engaged with a professional evaluator to determine the value of the investment property and PPE owned, so the property, plant and equipment owned by the entity to allocate it in. However, for the 15-16 year, no value has been placed in S, and it might be considered for the 16-17 year. I also know that the department is also busy liaising with Treasury and specifically the Accountant General to try and get better guidance as to how they can resolve this matter going forward. Then qualification item 2 is regarding the royalty revenue that is incorrectly recognized in the statements of ITB. And based on our recommendation to pay the money over to SARS, this was not accepted, so therefore the qualification item has not yet been resolved. And then regarding the provision incorrectly recognized, it's also just an accounting disagreement at the moment between the Auditor General and ATP management, where we are saying that the provision for the distribution of beneficiaries is not a provision, as there is no past event, consequently there is no present obligation. So that's the progress regarding their main qualification areas on ITP, and then also for the committee to note is to take consideration regarding the ITP's qualification areas and to track the progress on that going forward. And then also with regards to, they incurred some irregular expenditure last year. As far as I, on my discussion with our case in auditors, they did indicate that controls have been implemented to prevent this from happening again. Okay, and that's it. I'll take some questions.
Thank you very much, Eugene.
with the relevant entity or the department. Without the waste of time, then let me take this opportunity to thank the Auditor General's office for briefing us about the matters that we have to take into consideration. We are aware that you're working together with some of the Chapter 9 institutions to strengthen our oversight responsibility. Thank you so much for the briefing. It will open our eyes on which areas of we must focus on, especially on the farms that we have to visit, as identified by your report. Thank you very much. Can we just break for lunch then and come back with ITP and the commission? Where is the lunch?
What time I'm starting again?